You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. In 2021, with much publicity, Congress finally passed an infrastructure bill.
In a few moments, the Senate will pass the bipartisan infrastructure bill, dedicating over $1 trillion to strengthen every major category of our country's physical infrastructure.
Those categories include rebuilding roads and bridges, funding new broadband initiatives, and helping communities respond to climate change. But baked into that bill is a requirement that local municipalities provide some matching funds in order to get federal money. That precondition spells trouble for many rural communities.
Federal funds come with a lot of strings attached. They're very necessary, but you know they're daunting when you get them.
That's Hoquiam City Administrator Brian Shea. Hoquiam and Aberdeen are gearing up to build new levees to address worsening flooding. We'll talk more with Brian in a moment about that specific project. But first, we wanted to learn more about the challenges local communities face in getting these funds for climate resiliency projects. So we called up Kristen Smith. She's an applied researcher at Headwaters Economics and recently authored a report on how funding requirements in the infrastructure bill put rural communities like Hoquiam at a disadvantage. And she laid out the prevalence of local matching in the infrastructure law.
We know that a lot of this resilience funding is being distributed by competitive grants. So when we looked at the bipartisan infrastructure law, which of course is just one law of many different ways that funding is getting to communities these days, but in that law, about 60% of the funding is going to require a local match. Local matches are really features of federal funding. They have been for decades. But as we're thinking about how to help communities get the resources that they need, the local match can actually be a barrier to accessing that funding.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about that. But first off, why does the federal government require local municipalities, local counties to pony up their own funding? I mean, what's the rationale behind that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's something that's kind of taken for granted. Like I said before, the local match has really been a feature of federal funding for a long time. It's one way to get some efficiencies potentially and to ensure that local communities have skin in the game. That said, when we talk about these projects for building resilience, they are complicated. We know that communities are taking tons of time, years to plan these projects, then to try to get the funding and then to construct them. And then they're also committing to maintain them. So when you're talking about having skin in the game, a local match doesn't really even get at the whole suite of ways that communities already have skin in the game just by planning these projects.
So in practice, how does local matching work with these big grant pools of money? Which communities win and which lose out when local matching is part of the application?
Yeah, when competitive grants are the way that we're getting money to local governments, the local match can be a really big barrier. One of the things that grant writers will always say, it takes money to get money. And a local match is a great example of that. So take, for instance, FEMA's BRIC program. This is FEMA's flagship funding source for resilience funding. And for most communities, it requires a 25% match. There are many local governments that won't even submit an application to FEMA because they know that they don't have that upfront money to meet the local match requirements. For those communities that can actually make the local match, it can have a longer-term burden because it can actually be expensive to raise revenue to meet the local match.
And why is it so hard for these rural areas to raise the money?
So we know that communities with smaller populations and limited tax bases tend to have fewer options for raising revenue. That's for a couple of reasons. One is they might have a really specialized economy with volatile revenue that can just make it hard to plan long term. And the other is some local governments are really constrained by state fiscal policies about how they're able to raise revenue. And so one solution here, beyond rethinking the local match, is also giving communities the flexibility in their fiscal policies so that they're better able to raise revenue for things like a local match.
I think you make a really important point in your reporting about the size of climate resilience projects. I mean, we are talking about huge, like flood mitigation projects that are going to be expensive in very rural communities with low density residents. And this is not something that scales for like where your tax base is, right? This is going to be a huge cost put on very few number of folks. And it's not something that, you know, a lot of communities will be able to even tackle, will be able to even overcome that barrier of entry, which is the matching funding. I mean, what is it about climate resiliency, especially, that makes this a challenging funding model for the federal government to be requiring in the infrastructure bill?
There are two things that make the resilience funding challenging, particularly for rural areas. On the one hand, these can be big projects that are spread out over geographically large areas that have very few people to pay for them. And we know that infrastructure projects are often paid for at the local level. And then the second thing is that rural places tend to have lower capacities. And when I say capacity, I mean they just might not have the staff or the resources at the local government level to try to get the money to pay for these projects. So there are a lot of concerns about how we're going to help the places that need the money the most. We know many rural communities are on the front line of climate change, and yet they're often the least well-positioned to actually get the help that they need. So there's a real need to really think about how we're going to make sure that these federal resources get to the places that need them the most.
Are there any alternatives to local matching that the federal government could try with the infrastructure bill?
There are alternatives to local matches. On the one hand, I think we're already seeing a lot of movement by federal agencies. For example, FEMA's BRIC funding has a lower local match for disadvantaged rural communities, which is 10%. Some people might argue that that is still a barrier, but it is good to see a lot of federal agencies thinking about, can they waive local matches and help rural places access the money? The other side of the question is, are there other ways to get this money to resources that don't include competitive grants? Competitive grants are just really hard for rural and disadvantaged communities, and we have other ways to distribute funding to local governments. There can be direct allocations. There are community development grants. We have other models for getting money to local governments that we should start exploring.
And for folks who might not know, FEMA's BRIC program is also known as the Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities Program. And ahead of this infrastructure bill, this has really been a big source of funding for local communities when it comes to climate resilience, right?
Exactly. FEMA's BRIC program is a really innovative program. It offers a lot of flexibility to communities to have these kind of big picture resilience projects and get the money for them. That said, I think FEMA is still working on ways to make sure that the money is equitably distributed, but they're making a lot of important strides for helping rural communities get access to that money.
Do you have optimism that the Biden administration or future administrations will move and adopt these alternatives? I mean, are they hearing the voices of rural communities that are saying, we have big needs here to address the warming climate, and we are simply unable to access this pool of money that you've set aside in order to, you know, help us do that? I mean, do you get the sense that the federal government will be looking at these alternatives seriously?
I do get that sense. You know, for a long, long time, rural communities have just said, there's just money not out there to help us. What we're seeing now is more and more federal money coming online for resilience, which is a really important change. Now I think we're trying to figure out, okay, how do we get the money to the places that need it the most? And now we're recognizing more and more that there are barriers that are preventing that. The local match is one barrier. There are many other barriers that we also need to address. But we're seeing the federal agencies talk to communities and really rethink their processes. So that's a really exciting change.
Big picture, what are the long-term consequences if the federal government continues to require local matching for climate funding?
Right. A worst-case scenario is that rural communities are not able to get the resources they need and they get left behind. We know that many rural places, including tribal areas, have had to deal with federal policies that haven't helped them or set them up for success. So the question today is, are we going to help the rural places that need resources get the resources they need to be more resilient for the future?
Kristen Smith is an applied researcher at Headwaters Economics. She's also the author of a recent report on how matching funds prevent communities from accessing money for climate resilience projects. Thank you, Kristen.
Thanks so much.
And for more on what this looks like here in Washington State, we reached out to Brian Shea, Hoquiam City Administrator. The city is in the thick of this, trying to secure money for levees to protect Aberdeen and Hoquiam from floods. But piecing together funding from a patchwork of agencies and jurisdictions has been complicated. Brian Shea joins me now. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
What has flooding in the Hoquiam, Aberdeen, Grace Harbor area been like in recent years?
Well, recent years actually ties into history as we've suffered from flooding for, you know, generations. You know, since the 1960s, we've had 17 federally declared disasters from flooding. But in recent years, I would say that the flooding has been more frequent due to climate change, king tides, and other atmospheric conditions to where we do suffer even more flooding. And for the first time in history, or at least my career at the city, and I've been here 17 years, I saw the river overtop its banks just from a king tide where there was no rain impacting the height of the water.
Oh, wow. When did you see that?
That was in January this year. I think it was January 3rd.
Mm. So tell me about your proposed levee projects. Where are they located? How will they help the situation with flooding?
Aberdeen and Hoquiam have come together to build the Aberdeen-Hoquiam Flood Protection Project. There are two levee segments that make up that flood protection project. One is solely in Hoquiam, that is the North Shore Levee West, and then there is a larger levee that spans from East Aberdeen to East Hoquiam that's called the North Shore Levee. So altogether, those two levees are about 11 miles in total length.
And so right now, the levees, there's been a groundbreaking ceremony, but you are still in the environmental review stage. Some designs are getting finalized. Where is funding at for these projects?
Yeah, so the groundbreaking we had in June was on the Fry Creek Pump Station, which is the largest pump station that serves the Aberdeen-Hoquiam area. It's in Aberdeen. That happened in June. Where we are in the funding for the two levees, we have received about $100 million in federal funds, which for a community of our size is amazing. I mean, I don't think there's any two cities the size of Aberdeen and Hoquiam that have received that much federal funding throughout the nation. So we're very proud of that. The bulk of that, $85 million, was through National Competitive Grant Program, the BRIC program, and then we also received some local project funding, you know, a direct appropriation from Congress, two different requests that total about $15 million. We have about $15 million allocated from local funds from the two cities, about $2 million from Grace Harbor County, and then we're trying right now to secure the last $35.5 million, which is the final funding we anticipate needing for construction of the two levees. We've put in a capital budget request before the Washington State Legislature, and we're really hoping to secure that final $35.5 million.
So there's a pretty high-stakes situation for you at the legislature right now, whether or not the state is going to help you out with these levees. If for some reason that doesn't come through, how much could Hoquiam and Aberdeen realistically afford to pay as a match for this federal funding?
Well, as distressed communities, we feel that, you know, the $15 million that we have allocated is the maximum that we're hoping to spend. If we are responsible to go for more, ultimately we'll have to do something to where the citizens will have to pick up the burden of the additional costs. So maybe it would be increased stormwater utility fees, or it would be, you know, some sort of additional tax to pay for the, you know, the additional match, because what we'd have to do is go out and get a loan to pay for the remaining project costs, and then that would be paid back by the whatever revenue source we increased or added. But, you know, our community's just continuously been disadvantaged and economically challenged, and we just really can't put more burden on our citizens. So we're really hoping that the state comes through with some additional funding. And we feel like we have a good story and reason why the state should invest.
I do encourage folks to read up about this project in a great report by Hannah Weinberger in Crosscut. She goes into the issue of insurance and the quandary that coastal communities are facing when it comes to either elevating their buildings, moving their buildings, or building defensive infrastructure, as Hoquiam and Aberdeen have chosen to do. We've been talking today about the barriers that smaller communities are facing accessing money that's in the infrastructure bill, also from FEMA when it comes to climate resilience. Brian, how does it feel to be a local leader and seeing this money that's dangled out there from the federal government, but knowing that it's only accessible if you can go above and beyond, scraping together money from your own budget, trying to convince the state leaders to support the project, to match tens of millions of dollars for these really important resiliency projects? How does it feel to be in that situation?
Well, it feels amazing to be in the situation we are today with the funding that we have secured. But going back in time, I will say that it was very daunting and very challenging. Thinking about the BRIC application, Hoquiam applied for a BRIC application in 2019 when we sought the $34.5 million. That application to FEMA was 46 pages long. There were things that had to be done by an economist, by an engineer, by a good narrative grant writer. It was not something that a small city could handle in-house. So our city council at that time took a leap of faith, and we spent $15,000 hiring HDR Engineering, who is now designing the project, to help us with that grant application. And so just to go for the federal funding was a huge investment, I feel, out of our budget, because that's not something our small city would normally do. But that money was out there, and we felt that this was our time to take a shot, and luckily we were selected. We were one of, I don't know, 17 projects in the nation. It was a very small number of projects that were funded. We felt very ecstatic to be chosen. And once that BRIC application was awarded, I mean, then we knew the project was a reality. We were going to get to the finish line. So now we're, you know, I would say if this was a sports analogy, we're, you know, heading into the fourth quarter, and, you know, I feel like we got the lead, and we just need to push till the game's over.
Is there anything you think that the federal government could do, for example, as this infrastructure money is getting distributed, to make it easier for communities like Hoquiam and Aberdeen to access really necessary funding?
Well, I know that they're trying, and that they see that that's a problem for small communities. You know, I think providing some funding to also apply for these applications would be helpful as well, because it just, unless you have the expertise and experience doing them, it's just, it is pretty daunting. And, you know, at a small community or small city, you know, you don't have a lot of staff. You just don't even have the time necessarily to put in a grant application. So I don't know, any way that the federal government can make it easier to get money where it's needed, it would be wise. It's very challenging. Federal funds come with a lot of strings attached. They're very necessary, but you know, they're daunting when you get them.
Hoquiam City Administrator Brian Shea, thanks very much, and I wish you luck at the state level. I know you're going to be watching that process very closely.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org, or of course on your favorite podcast app.